This facility is under video surveillance by the 508 podcast. It's June the 26th, 2009. I'm Mike Benedetti. How are you?
Brendan Mellican.
And we're here by the famous Turtle Boy. There he is.
That dude is not the Turtle Boy. That's some other guy.
That's just a guy. You saw the Turtle Boy statue up there. And we're here waiting for Critical Mass to start on this Friday in Worcester. We have our bikes. Bike. And Brendan, can you talk a little bit about what Critical Mass is?
No. Well, yeah, I can make it up. Critical Mass is, it's something that takes place in cities throughout the country where cyclists get together and kind of take over the streets, so to speak, to make their presence known and felt to motorists who might not otherwise respect the rights of cyclists in an urban area.
It's a good time to take a bike ride. Kind of pretty safe.
It is.
Safety in numbers.
Yeah, I think that's the... Well, unless you're in New York where you might get a hockey check by a police officer, but... For the most part, yes. Successful events nationwide. Huge turnouts in some cities, not so huge in others.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We'll see how many people show up today. This is the one of the few sunny afternoons, or at least not rainy afternoons, we've had in a while. I wanted to talk about a couple of things that we've talked about in past shows. One, vegetarian renaissance.
Still going, or is it over?
Well, the color versions of the Vegetarian Dining Guide are out now.
So I think that counts as an extra week.
It's still going.
It buys us another week.
He's not supposed to get me on camera with the drinks. It's supposed to be all off camera.
That's product placement.
Also, the quarry law, the city quarry ordinance passed. I've heard that there was really no reportage in the TNG about this again, which is kind of weird.
I haven't seen much of anything other than just the snippets that you'd get post-city council meeting.
But yeah.
With the sort of ramp-up seemed rather large with the city solicitor, O'Brien's administration, maybe pushing back a little bit from the proposed ordinance. Was expecting more coverage, but yeah, it seems like it just kind of fizzled out.
Well, I talked to some people afterwards, some supporters. I talked to one supporter from Rhode Island who said that he thought it was the most progressive such legislation in the country, so he was really excited to see a city near his city enact something like this. As I understand it, it basically says that if you are the city or you do business with the city, you can't do a criminal background check on somebody, at least not through the quarry system, until you're actually ready to hire them. You know, you basically say, I want to make you a job offer, let me do a quarry on you. I don't exactly know how, I don't understand enough about hiring to know how that works, how you legally define you've made them a job offer.
Yeah.
But, and I guess also you have to give them, if it's the quarry, you have to say sort of, you have to explain to them what it is on the quarry that rubbed the person the wrong way. So that's one thing. What else have we talked about recently on this show? Telegram and Gazette. Interesting article on the about the Telegram and Gazette in the Telegram and Gazette on Sunday about the impending sale, possible sale later this summer to some consortium of local tycoons. It was the kind of article which...
Can I complain about the Telegram and Gazette a little bit?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right.
This was the kind of article that kind of frustrates me because it's not clear who this is written for. It has a lot of detail. It's definitely written for people who were interested in spending, you know, $10, $20, $30 million to buy the TNG. Probably more detail for people who don't care about this need to know. For people like yourself and I who are kind of obsessed by the TNG, frustratingly out of context information in this article. For example, we finally find out the Telegram and Gazette circulation numbers from the last reporting period, which came out a couple months ago. But you know, the only people who have access to these are people who subscribe to this information, and so you know the big newspapers who subscribe to this and write about it haven't really reported on it. Is there something over there?
No, everything is cool. I was just kind of dazed a little bit. I thought the most interesting thing about the article was that historically the Telegram has not really done a very good job of reporting on itself, and that same story was I think Sean Sutner was in it, did it? It ran in the Globe as well, or ran on Boston.com. And that's where I first saw it, was on Boston.com. Didn't notice who the byline on it was, and it read like a non-Telegram story. It actually read like an outside party writing about the Telegram, which was nice to see, because, you know, there were almost some scoops in there where, you know, Sean had gotten some quotes from people inside the Telegram who basically gave him a no comment, which seemed a little awkward, but wasn't nearly as awkward as you might think from reading it outside of the constraints of the Telegram.
Yeah,
it was good
to
see them actually reporting on what's going on in the building.
It was. And I guess the only reason that I bring up, that I begin this complaining about this, is just that I would like to offer a little context for some of the stats. One is to talk about the circulation, finally. Circulation has dropped 3.5% since this time last year. which is not that bad, because overall it's like 7% for most newspapers. So it's the first time in a long it's the first time in a long time that they're doing better than average.
The one odd thing about that is that, you know, the city has been touting itself pretty heavily on the expected increase in our census numbers going into next year's, you know, national census, which should be huge numbers, close to 30,000 people they're expecting added on to the, we're going to be going back to the second largest city in New England.
So we're going to have 200,000 people?
That's the number that I hear, you know, bandied about, depending on how they end up doing the counting and how aggressive they are with the counting. So seeing the daily still continue to take a slide when the overall population is going up and going up significantly over the past decade seems even doubly grim, right? I mean, we have new people coming into the city, apparently, or maybe we're just breeding the hell out of the city. Who knows? But if we do have new people coming into the city and the daily can't bring on new readers, in the print format, that seems to say even more about where the numbers are going. Like, say, if our census numbers had stayed flat, you know, would we have gone down 10% over the last year? Over the last decade or whatnot? The numbers, I would assume, would be much higher.
Well, the TNG has had a couple of reporting periods where their numbers dropped twice as fast So for them to drop half, since then, it's been only slightly more than average. So the fact that it's half the average now is impressive.
Well, this is very similar to when we report now on, like, employment numbers, right? So, I mean, like, the unemployment rates.
It's only
maybe 1 or 2% lower than it was the month before. If you look at it in aggregate, it's still a huge decrease from where we were last fall. But, you know, we softened that up by just, you know, comparing month to month.
Sorry to interrupt. I'm going to have the TNG building in the background.
Oh, that's nice. I think the biggest thing was that it's that they're reporting on themselves, which is nice to see that they're not just ignoring their own news, which is huge. Two, the one thing that they're still going for them, which is great, is that their advertising numbers still seem pretty solid, at least relative to the rest of the industry. You know, where the Globe is clearly bleeding revenue in terms of advertising dollars, the Telegram now seems to be at least relatively stable, or they're not dropping as fast as they had been, both in print and online.
Right. And we know that they are making money. It's so that they're... We don't know where this number came from, but like $1 million. They're making like $1 million a year or something.
And what was the figure for the sale price?
The figure for the sales price was like in the 10, 20, 30 million dollar range. Yeah. These are numbers based on nothing. I don't think that these are numbers based on offers. I wish we had actual notes with us today, which we don't.
It would be interesting to see if we could just walk over the building and make them an offer and see if they accepted or refused it.
You know, I have $100 in my pocket.
Make a couple trips back and forth in different hats and disguises and see when they actually bite. And we could find that the number was maybe 50, 60 bucks. It'd be like a great deal on Craigslist or something, you know, and we could walk away with ownership of the newspaper.
I don't know if it's going to happen. Because the other thing is, the other thing that was kind of interesting was that they talked about their online visitor numbers, which was interesting to see. And they actually bragged about it. They put it in the context of, some problems with the paper, but online numbers are going up. They're now getting 600,000 unique visitors a month.
Right.
And Pie and Coffee, which is the blog where you're possibly seeing this, gets 6,000 unique visitors a month. So the fact that you're only getting 100 times what a basically neglected blog about radical Catholic action in Worcester gets...
I think someone should make you an offer. I mean, that... You know, if that's worth $20 million, I mean, you might be worth $2 million.
Yeah, right? And it's good numbers. I mean, it's impressive numbers. It's just not, I don't think that you pin the hopes of your newspaper on doing 100 times better than my blog. You know, I mean, if you were doing 1,000 times better, then maybe we can talk. But
well, if we all just assume or agree that the future of journalism is going to be something more along the lines of an online publication as opposed to a print publication, then, you know, that traffic might actually be the metric one would want to look at, since your advertising revenue is all going to be based on, a CPM model, the number of eyeballs hitting your ads. You might actually be more valuable than the Telegram.
I don't think so.
I think you're more valuable.
Well, I feel valuable. We're waiting to see if any critical mass people are going to show up. They're not. This episode is not on TV this week.
That one guy who was riding around in the background, he's over there now. I'm going to pass judgment just based on the saddle of his bicycle, which is a really nice Brooks saddle that I noticed off in the distance. I'm going to guess he's with critical mass. Single speed, Brooks saddle, that screams critical mass to me.
We'll see.
He's way over there.
We shall see. I've been doing a lot of talking to people about the local economy this week, talking to people about local businesses and stuff. I guess the one interesting thing along these lines is that there is a new publication about the city coming out called Inside Worcester. I wish I had Worcester magazine on me so I could, like, actually look up the details of this. I guess it's something to look out for. They're having the big press conference, and I'm saying this on Monday. Do you have any secret information about this?
I don't have any really secret information. I've heard from a couple people, you know, that they are taking information for subscriptions, which is kind of confusing to me. I can't tell whether or not they're looking to do a print-only publication or if they're going to be, you know, both.
They have a
print.
Website.
They do have a website. Does it look like it's going to be anything more than a, you know, an informational website, or are they going to be actually running content?
The website I looked at the website, I feel like a couple weeks ago, somebody posted a link up, and it just sort of looked like it was a work in progress.
Okay.
But it looked like there would probably be articles on there. I can't imagine why you would not.
Well, that's what I was confused about. I mean, I can't remember the gentleman's name who was running it.
Rod Lee,
that's right. And he comes from the Telegram, I believe, back there. And
we're basically giving you no information. You can just fast forward this part.
Yeah. But it could be interesting. Who knows? I'm just curious whether or not he's coming from a newspaper mentality and looking to work in print, or if the focus is going to be on web-based information. All I got.
There you go.
What else do we have?
I don't know.
You know, I had a question for you, actually. You were on Twitter yesterday. You were asking folks to guess what the possible, you know, if we had to guess what the possible revenue would be for illicit drugs in a city like
Worcester. You say 43 million.
I guessed 43 million doing some really, really bad math, admittedly bad math. But I was curious more what you were shooting for there. Was that just a random piece of information you were looking for?
I'm writing some stuff about the local economy. if somebody will tell me what the drug economy is in Worcester, like somebody will give me, you know, somebody who has credentials will tell
right.
me this, I would be interested in reporting this alongside of the legitimate economy.
Well, you know, I think the DEA has an office right over in this building, don't they? Maybe we could just walk across the street and find out. If not, I know the ATF used to be up there, but the DEA might be up there too. We could just walk in and.
How do they? What do you know? What do you understand? The kind of models that they use to get that information?
I don't. Well, I think what they do is, I think it's based on the number of seizures that are made, large seizures,
okay.
and the guesstimate as to what percentage of the overall influx of narcotics into the country would be, and then you know use the really really big flowery sort of press-friendly numbers for the street value of bulk amounts of narcotics.
Right.
The last number where I came with that 43 million number was I looked at the last reported number I could find for that value, which was 65 billion. I think it was nationally was the estimated. Net value of narcotics on the street,
okay.
And then kind of broke it down on a per person basis and multiplied it by roughly what our population is, and it came out to around $43 million.
But okay.
Yeah, I don't know where if there really is a legitimate metric. You know, the one argument that's always made about when it comes to decriminalization or legalization is that you would immediately bring down the value of narcotics.
Mm-hmm.
So even trying to compare it to you know a legitimate local economy is obviously difficult and fuzzy since there really is no fair comparison.
But, okay. Well. Yeah.
Still
a big number, though. Yeah, you know, it's actually interesting. I've been reading, like I said, a lot about local economies, and I've been reading about the, people may have seen the number that supposedly for every $100 you spend at a locally owned business, there's $68 of additional local economic activity that comes out of that, and for every $100 you spend at a non-locally owned business, there's only $43. So there's like an extra $25 of like a multiplier effect coming off of your money spent, $100 spent at a local place. And I've been looking at the report, trying to get my head around the report where this comes from. This is from a study in a neighborhood of Chicago in 2004. And I can't find anybody really critiquing it or saying this is a bad report. But a lot of it's based on, like, taking they don't actually compare it to business to, I don't think they really compare it to non-local businesses in that neighborhood. They compare it to a non-local business and then they like run it through an economic model to guess what that non-local business would do in that neighborhood. And it's a part where it's like frustrating to be a layman and read that. And I wish that I could find some good economist critiquing that or at least explaining it, because it's the kind of thing where it's like, you know, it's hard to, without taking a semester's class probably, it's hard to get a sense of like what these economic models are like and what the pitfalls are.
Yeah, well, and I think you mentioned this on Twitter as well recently, that you know it used to be said that every product in the world you know has somehow you know made its way back to Worcester in terms of manufacturing, right? Like a component of just about everything was at one point in time made in a city like Worcester, but the reality is now where we've lost so much in terms of manufacturing, the distribution models have obviously changed. That's where I wonder how it's even possible to figure out what number of dollars, I would say like $100, actually stays in the city when you have to figure in the distribution chain and you know the point of origin for products.
Well,
and
well, this report, the Andersonville study, it's interesting to note, actually focused on like service businesses and restaurants and shops. So it wasn't like manufacturing, it wasn't like locally manufactured stuff, which might even have a greater
multiplier effect.
But still, I mean, like even for retail, you know, like how much manufacturing do we have that ends up in the retail space here? If you go to even a local, fully locally owned retail clothing establishment, like Lou John's up the street, right, which is closing soon, I mean, how much of their inventory, you know, is in any way related to the city of Worcester? Beyond the employment base, I think it would be hard to argue that anything really comes back to the city other than what goes into the employees' pockets.
Right.
But which is still huge.
Yeah. Well, here's what I think is made in the city of Worcester based on my research, and there's other stuff you know how to get a hold of me. Let me know. Baseball gloves? There's a baseball glove company in Worcester. Sun Myung Moon's son, his gun company, makes pistols in Worcester.
They do make pistols. They also, that company, Carr Arms, now owns the patents for the original Tommy gun. And I believe that the Tommy gun might actually, the modern version of the Tommy gun, which is kind of like a replica, is still made in Worcester too. But they have a number of factories. It could be in their upstate New York factory.
Okay. I heard stuff about there being like some kind of furniture manufacturing in Worcester. This is vague information. Somebody brought up Sori Weaving on Highland Street, which I don't really think of as manufacturing so much as, like, you know, it's like an art thing. It's like saying that, like the Worcester Center for Crafts manufactured pottery. It's like you're manufacturing pottery, but not really on a commercial scale. I mean, it's mostly about, like, getting into improvisational weaving and learning a craft and learning an art. And not so, it's like more of an instructional thing than a manufacturing thing, Sori.
Yeah.
And that's about it. I mean, a lot of food, a lot of bakeries. Obviously, Polar Cola, restaurants,
right?
Obviously, are manufacturing.
But there's so few, even with the restaurants, where they're sourcing goods locally. I know the Armistice Abbey, you know, prides themselves on taking in a lot of their raw ingredients from local farms and what have you. But I can't think of many other places that pride themselves on, or at least call note to the fact that they take in the majority of their ingredients in from local sources.
I think that, what's the place on Pearl Street that has the number? I've never eaten
it. Oh, 55
there.
Pearl.
55
they
Pearl.
They might be doing the same. I still haven't been in there yet.
One Love also on Main Street is very local. They actually buy all their stuff through the Artichoke Co-op as much as possible.
Really?
And the Artichoke, which has, you know, I think a couple dozen items of produce available at this point, actually on their thing has like organic, local, and distant. Those are the two classifications of fruit. So they're very cognizant there of where the stuff is coming from. So there are a few restaurants where you can get stuff, you know, from the county, stuff from the greater area.
That's something I would love to see more of, is more locally sourced produce. And we've been talking about the vegetarian renaissance, but for those of us who still enjoy meat products, you know, locally sourced meats as well too. I think we're probably a little too congested to shoot for that taking place in Worcester proper, but at least from the county, yeah. It's nice that there's still something here. It's nice
well,
to see
and
it
there's plenty of like local dairy and stuff, so you can get that.
Right.
Local jelly from Spencer, little things like that.
One of these days, I'll figure out how to get around our zoning ordinances on farm animals, and I'll have my pygmy goats in the backyard, so I can have pygmy goat cheese. That's always been my long-term dream.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I've been posting a lot of this stuff because I'm trying to write like a follow-up to an article I did last year about a week of living locally, which is actually not that hard. The weird thing was that, despite not feeling like I lived locally, I realized that I bought a lot more stuff at local places than I thought, and it wasn't that hard to make that 100% local. So I'm just throwing stuff out there. If you have any information or thoughts on this, go ahead and share them, you know, for what it's worth. I don't know.
It's getting close, Mike.
It's getting close.
I still think that's the only dude from, over there now, the only dude from Critical Mass. Brook Saddle, single speed, and he was doing a really sweet track stand across the street when he rolled back up over here, so I think that's the trifecta. Definitely a Critical Mass guy.
Alright, well, we're going to kill time for 10 minutes in the hopes of featuring part of the Critical Mass ride on this week's podcast. What are you excited about this week, Brendan?
What I'm excited about has nothing to do really with the city of Worcester proper, but I'm throwing a rather large anniversary party for my parents on Sunday, their 40th wedding anniversary, so been a relatively large production, got close to 150 people coming, and have a band on site, a caterer coming in cooking barbecue on site all day, so it should be a interesting day. I'm sure my blood pressure will be exceedingly high.
Excellent. I'm throwing a 15th anniversary party for my household.
I'm actually excited
Saturday
about that
night.
Too. I keep forgetting that's this week.
I really wish it wasn't happening. I feel like I don't have the energy.
I hope other people pick up the slack, because I'm not gonna.
That should be a good night, though. I'm sure we'll be a lot of people there, and always good times. What else we have?
That's about it. We're sitting out here on Worcester's Common.
I hope that's not all of Critical Mass right there. That one dude is not going to stop a lot of traffic. And I don't know that I'm willing to help him.
It'd be you, me, and him blocking all the lanes.
You watch OA Chainsmoke. I don't know that I'm up for critical mass tonight. I'll wish you farewell.
Maybe we should ride the bus.
They do have the racks on the front. The bus right back to Gatton Town Square.
There's a kid riding his bus, his bike. I don't know. I mean, you know, Gabe Rollins and I did a walk around of his block last year, just sort of commenting on what was going on. And, you know, it was kind of interesting, but I have to say there's still not a lot of dynamism. It seems like people are holding their breath about City Square. Everybody I talked to today about the local economy, it was all City Square.
The most unfortunate thing is that you talk to anyone who is older and grew up in the city. Everyone has such fond memories of this area being such a bustling marketplace for, you know, both food, retail products and whatnot, restaurants. People really enjoyed coming into the city from outside of the area to shop down here, and you just don't see any of that anymore, which is... unfortunate.
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem to be a lot of progress being made. Do you have any thoughts on the talk at City Hall about maybe trying to take over the Midtown Mall?
I can't believe they want to, you know, well, so here's what I would have to say. I think you could definitely do good stuff with the Midtown Mall.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful building.
If I ran the Midtown Mall, I would shake things up. Also, the Midtown Mall has a lot of weird charm,
yes,
which I think is actually its major asset.
Mm-hmm.
That I would try to highlight and develop, which I don't have any confidence that the people at City Hall appreciate.
Right.
So they're probably better at like doing economic development on a thing like that than I am, is not saying much.
If the city actually wants to focus on, you know, like very sterile sort of entertainment or business, then yes, I think they might be a bit more qualified than you. Otherwise,
I think
you might have the leg up.
But I mean, I'm not saying, like, I don't know that they're more qualified than, say, like someone who
owns the building.
I don't have a lot of confidence in their ability to like, I don't say, like, what, you know, what do you point to say, look at the great job City Hall can do with developing
there
an area?
Are two buildings in the city of Worcester that have always made up my very short list of places that I fantasize about buying immediately after winning the lottery. The Midtown Mall is one, the other being the White Eagle on Green Street. I think they're the two most fascinating businesses in the city in terms of potential, not for what they are today, but what they just could be. And the Midtown Mall, simply because, you know, there's this huge space downstairs that I think either is or was a gym. I always envisioned that as recreating that as like Club Hell from The Matrix.
Okay.
But then the upstairs, you know, the main floor there, that is really prime, you know, retail real estate. And I'm not saying they're doing anything wrong over there, but if we did take the city's way of thinking that maybe we could do more, I don't think you have to do much more than look at the city as a whole, and you could really bring in a cross-section of most types of business and retail establishments that are already in the city and entice them to this area in mass, right? And,
right,
and maybe change the vibe of the whole place, change the feel of the whole place, make it more welcoming. Again, we're saying there seems to be a lack of dynamics down here.
Right.
Maybe help mix that up a little bit without just destroying the feel of what is a really great space. I mean,
yeah.
I think Phil Palmieri was talking about, you know, uncapping it, so, you know, it would be more walkthrough, you know, real estate. But I think there's a significant amount of value in having a covered yet open, you know, area that essentially is a cross through between two streets. There's a ton of great frontage there that used to be the Silver Wall Arcade, I believe.
Okay.
The space did have a lot of promise at one point in time, and it seems to have just been kind of mothballed for the most part.
Yeah, and you know, somebody was complaining in the article, I guess it was the Worcester Magazine article about the Midtown Mall, maybe it was the TNG article, one of the vendors there was complaining, well, you know, we had somebody walk in just the other day who said that they'd been around this neighborhood forever and never knew that we existed.
Right.
And I certainly feel that way. Like, I've worked in this neighborhood for years, I've walked through this neighborhood for more years than that, and I've certainly gone to the Midtown Mall my share of times, but I never felt like there was anybody from the Midtown Mall saying to me, come.
No, that hasn't been there in, I'd say, 15 years. I mean, I remember growing up when I was 10, 11 years old, maybe 12 years old, we used to take the bus from Catnick Square down here just to go to the arcade that was there. It was the most accessible and biggest arcade in the city. And that was, you know, something that brought in tons of kids from out of the area. There was always something happening.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of spillover into the other retail establishments that were in there. There were small, you know, food shops and whatnot. There was Kim's, where you could always buy yourself a nice butterfly knife or some throwing stars.
Mm-hmm.
There were complimentary businesses, right? You could go from the arcade to buy throwing stars.
Right.
There just isn't that sort of... There's nothing that the draw that actually brings people down there. Now that the Galleria is gone, there seems to be even less.
Yeah, you know, we did an interview with Jacob Berendez and Mike Leslie a couple of years ago in the Midtown Mall. Bruce Russell and I did an interview there at the dinette, and they both pointed out how much they loved the mall, and Jacob talked about how he sort of fantasized
having like a secret clubhouse, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles style. Was it Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles style secret clubhouse? I don't remember what movie it was, Secret Club. Maybe it was the Ninja Turtles, Secret Clubhouse. They're opening he kind of thought about opening HBML there, that it had that kind of weird feel. And, you know, the city's always trying to create an arts district or some kind of, you know.
You got people yelling at you over here now.
Are you doing a podcast?
Yeah, here it is, Critical Mass.
I was like, from the back, that totally looked like Mike Benedetti. And then I saw you, and then I saw that.
Stephanie Katz, are you here for Critical Mass?
I am.
Tell me about why you're here.
I'm here because I recently took my car off the road and started riding my bike as my primary mode of transportation for the first time in my life. And I've never gone to Critical Mass before. And
this is your first day?
This is my first Critical Mass ever. And I'm leaving town in 4 days, so I really wanted to come to this Critical Mass so that I could catch it before I leave.
I hope it goes good. I have this feeling everybody's going to be late.
I know. I don't think, and it really looks like it's going to rain. My friend's driving in from Northampton, uh-huh. And he said it's pouring, so who knows.
We may be drenched. Anyway, it's exciting to see.
What are you doing here?
We're recording a podcast, hoping that we would be able to catch part of Critical Mass in the podcast.
But we did get the one guy. I think I was right. He was here for Critical Mass.
Yeah, he's the guy.
Are you here for Critical Mass?
Yeah.
I'm Mike.
I'm Matt.
Nice to meet you, Matt. Are you going to like lead us in Critical Mass today? are other people going to show up?
Hopefully. I know Josh Chadwick said he was going to show up. And there's some stuff on Facebook. So,
all right.
I mean, if no one else shows up, you know, who was led before, I guess I could lead.
Awesome. Yeah, I have not been to Critical Mass in years. One of these people is their first time. One of these people has not also not been here in years, so... I don't know. Have you been to recent Critical Masses here?
The last one was supposed to be really good. The last time I went was in March, and we had a pretty small crowd.
Okay. Well, maybe with everybody away for the summer, not going to be a lot of people here today.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of people in Worcester for the summer for summer solutions, so I don't know if they're going to be coming or not.
All right.
But we'll see.
Cool. What is it that brings you to Critical Mass?
Well, I'm a shop manager on a bike, and I'm always just trying to... You know, be on my bike and visible in the city just to promote, you know, bicycles as a real alternate transportation.
Awesome.
And it's fun, you know, you get to meet up with other people who do the same thing.
This is Brendan Melican, my co-host on our podcast.
I need to know if it was fair. I actually passed judgment on you as you were riding around making a guess that I noticed your Brooks saddle, and I said that guy is definitely here for Critical Mass. Is that fair that I was able to pass judgment
that's a pretty good guess,
that you're here for Critical Mass based on your saddle alone?
Yeah, I think that's fair, unless I stole the bike, right?
You could have done that,
Awesome.
Not
well,
so many Brooks is on other bikes you listed.
They're not awesome.
It's according to WCRN, it's... Oh, their clock went away. According to my watch, it's like 5:07.
I've never been at a Critical Mass that started anywhere near on time. It just started on like 5:20.
Like 5:20. All right. Do we want to keep this thing rolling, or do we want to?
I think it might be done.
We want to wrap up our show.
I've run out of things to talk about.
All right. Well, we may have an extra bonus video clip at the end if we actually ride in Critical Mass of us on our bikes. Anyway, till then, I'm Mike Benedetti. This is Brendan Melican. Matt and Stephanie Katz. We're not doing a show next week, but the week after we will. Talk to you later.